down, please.
You know, just the different experiences that I have, and I've caught a ton of things on film. You know, if I feel something around me, I'll take a picture, and I always catch something in the photos.
Yeah.
Well, one night, I was laying in bed. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't sleep. And up above to the right side of my head, I heard something talk in this language that I've never heard in my whole life, mm-hmm. ever. And, you know, I rolled over and tried to go back to sleep, and finally I was starting to fall asleep, and then I heard it again. So this is just it keeps going on and on. And then another night I kept hearing Enoch, Enoch, Enoch. This went on night after night after night.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't stop. And then, you know, I was getting all these different signs through people on Facebook talking about it. And I'm like, what is this book? What is this book? And I could never fully understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I downloaded it and read it. And, you know, like a lot of other things in the Bible, a lot of it symbolism. It tells about, you know, what's coming in the end day, so to speak. And I really didn't understand it. So maybe you can give me a briefing on it.
Wow, you just came right out with both barrels, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh boy, where do I start? So you came up with a Catholic background.
Yeah.
Okay. So you probably asked the same questions that I asked when I heard about the Book of Enoch, is why didn't I ever hear about this in, you know, Sunday school or at Mass? What the hell? Right?
Right,
like,
right.
It's like at first you got angry because somebody was holding information from you.
Yeah.
And the Book of Enoch is a very, very, very key book. And there is no, it's no coincidence when it started to resurface. It never really went away like the Gnostic Gospels or the Nag Hammadi Library. It's mm-hmm. always kind of been there, but it's such a sealed book, and since you've downloaded it, I did have a hard copy here, but I always let people borrow books, and I never get them back, you know?
Right.
But if you read the book, and you have read the book, it says, this book is a sealed book until the end generation.
Hmm.
Okay? This book is not going to come back into the forefront of the people's eyes until the appropriate time, the time of the end. Right?
Yeah.
It's like a lotus flower, the Book of Enoch is. Okay? And I like that, the whole idea of lotus flowers. And before we go any further, some people complain about the way I communicate because they're like, where is he going with it? But I assure you.
Oh, I believe you. Yeah.
I'm walking around the lake. It's the journey, mm-hmm. right? It's the journey that's going to get you there. So, lotus flower is obviously something that is symbolic of enlightenment, and you know, I'm a big Radiohead fan. Mm-hmm. I believe that, and in fact, I did come to enlightenment due in part to Radiohead and events surrounding their music, because it is something coming from the other side of the veil. The band is just the device to transmit this truth. The truth is coming to us at every angle. Through theater, through movies, through literature, through the internet, through music.
Right.
And whenever we are focusing on people, and I don't want to, you know, bash Alex Jones, people like that have a place, you know. But whenever we're... I'm sorry, there was some music playing in the background. if we start perceiving anything that's going on around us through the lens of fear, or that something bad is coming, or something cataclysmic coming, that's going to keep us from evolving. And that's just the best word that I could say, right? And so, getting back to the lotus flower. The lotus flower is beautiful because it's a representation of us on our journey to enlightenment or awakening or ascension or, you know, touching your higher self. All these terms, they mean the same thing. And basically, my interpretation is, getting all the answers that we've longed for, that we've hungered for.
Yeah.
You know, that is God. Knowledge.
Right.
The gnosis, the personal. Christians will tell you that God wants what's called koinonia, an intimate knowledge, and they don't really know how to explain that the connotation of the word koinonia is talking about physical sexual union.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gnostics like me, we've been, you know, burned at the stake and branded heretics, and we've had to go into hiding, and because they call us a sex cult.
Right, right.
You know, and all they do is that's sex orgies, and that's all that is. And they don't understand the beauty of the harnessing of the sexual creative energy, right?
True, yeah.
And so, you know, but it's the universe itself is having sex, negative and positive. Electricity right. is negative and positive. It's two polar opposites making love, intimately knowing one another, and then you have energy. And then when the Bible talks about the type of love that God wants with us, it uses the, I think it's Hebrew, it might be Greek, but I think it's Hebrew, it sounds Hebrew, koinonia, which is an intimate love. And that's how the Bible describes God's desire for us as creation, an intimate union.
Right.
Okay? And so, where am I going with this?
Daniel.
Sometimes I get lost. But, and so we forget that. And then, you know, we forget that, and then we fall into samsara. You know, the present tense that we find ourselves in is samsara, the life wheel.
Right.
The wheel of life and death and rebirth and reincarnation, the cycle. You know, the Bhagavad Gita says, oh, Brahma, may I never be born in a land where the truth and your glory is not taught. Right? The truth is the truth.
Right.
And it's everywhere. It's gnosis. It's that intimate knowledge. And Hindus call it samhadhi. And samhadhi also in the context of their language is sexual in nature. Not like, you know, pornography sexual in nature, but that type of union where you your mind, your spirit, and your body become one.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, a knowing, just a surrender to one another's, you know. And this is why we talk about the age of Aquarius and the feminine divine is coming back in. It's this. The universe, the energies are having this lovemaking session, and we are in this part where it's the foreplay of this great thing that's happening on our planet, you know. And so the story of the lotus flower is that it's this pod that grows out in the swamps of Asia, and it falls into the mud. It grows out in marshes and stuff, right?
True.
That represents our highest self. The highest part of us that is divine, okay, that pod. And it falls into the marsh, into the mud, into the muck, into the mire, and it begins to sink. And the farther that it sinks, it gets darker and darker, and there's creepy, crawly demons and snakes and slithery things, right? All down this journey to the very depths of the marsh, where it is under all this pressure. Right, and then eventually, when it's ready, it begins to float to the surface to seek the light of the sun.
When it's ready, yeah.
When it's ready.
Wow, yeah.
And then when it gets up to the top through the surface, and it sees the light, it unfurls. There's a Radiohead song called Lotus Flower. Listen to the lyrics. And you don't even have to understand the lyrics. Feel the vibration of those lyrics. In fact, hang on. We'll make this interactive. Can you hear what's coming through my headset?
Yes.
Okay, hang on.
Okay.
Lotus flower. Okay, hang on. Are you familiar with Radiohead at all?
No, I've never heard of them.
Okay. Listen to this song. Let me turn it up real quick, see if you can make sure you can hear it. Can you hear this? Can you hear that?
No.
Not at all?
Nope.
Okay, well, I'll send you the link real quick.
All right, cool.
And I want you to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And before I do, actually, let me finish the story of the lotus flower.
Okay.
So when it gets to the surface and it sees the sun, it begins to unfurl. And then it rests calm as a Hindu cow above all that ugliness. And scientists still don't know how. But when it does unfurl, there's not one speck of mud or dirt on any of the petals.
Isn't that amazing? Wow.
But that's you. That is you. That's why it's one of the most beautiful flowers that you'll ever see, because it is you.
Wow.
You came from infinite awareness. You came from the most divine and peaceful and creative, powerful and benevolent force. You are God. And you wanted an intimate knowledge of yourself. And so you chose to become a pod. And like Jesus, it said that Jesus was the King of Glory, but he humbled himself, putting on this weakly flesh. Why? To experience himself, to know thyself, man, and you will know the worlds and their gods. Christ, the preeminent one, the preexistent one, took on a body of weakness and flesh. Okay? Now, the Bible says, okay, people say, well, Jesus is God in the flesh, so he do everything. So there's nothing for him to learn. But that's not what the Bible says at all. The Bible said that there was something. There is something that God had to learn. You want to know what it is?
What?
It says that he learned obedience.
Wow.
Think about that for a second. There was something that an all-powerful God who's always existed, will always exist, and anywhere, there's nowhere that God's not, didn't know something because it was the most powerful thing. It had to submit to itself and learn obedience, something it did not know or have a concept of or grasp. But that's kind of tricky if you know that you're God, right?
Right.
You have to make yourself have amnesia and forget that you're God. You have to become that lotus pod.
Unbelievable.
And then you have to fall into the depths of the material world and the world of samsara, the world of suffering. And you have to go through all these horrible traumatic experiences, and everybody's been molested at 5, and it's usually a relative, or they've been beaten, or they've everybody on the face of this planet has been traumatized before the age of 6 years old. Everyone. Anybody who tells you they haven't is lying or don't remember or don't right. understand what trauma is. But that was right. deliberate on God's part to make itself forget it was divine so it could learn obedience.
And that's amazing. Wow.
This is all around us. So we are that pod. We are that beautiful lotus pod that willingly fell into the ugliness of the world. Now, you know, in this new age, you hear light workers.
Yeah.
Right? I'm a light worker, you know. I'm a messiah seed. And I'm not bashing any of that. Those people are they're evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the terms may seem a little bit tongue in cheek and a little corny and cheeky, but they're getting the idea. They're having a genuine experience.
Right.
And it's this they're coming towards the surface. They've reached an incarnation where they've done this shit enough. To where they're going, okay, all right, it's time for another game.
Yeah.
You know, that is what evolution is, and that's what's been going on, right? So Jesus, you know, Jesus is that's why I can't stand when spiritual people bash Christians or Jesus, because Jesus made enlightenment simple, really. And, okay, and this is the best way I know how to explain it, is people would call Jesus the Messiah, right? And he go, okay, don't be going and telling people that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, just let's keep that between you and me. Okay, all right, great. Yeah, I'm God in the flesh, okay? And then he got a crowd, and they were like, oh, you're the Messiah. You're God in the flesh. And he's like, okay, great. You believe that, guys, right? And they go, yeah, we believe that. Okay, but what did they really believe? An outside Messiah. So Jesus had to solve this problem of their forgetfulness. He had to somehow connect this outside Messiah that they seemed hell-bent on looking for, because of religious indoctrination from the Sanhedrin, he had to somehow, in their heads, connect what they had been indoctrinated with to what is the truth, which is that we're all God, right?
Right.
So he didn't try to argue with them and say, look, guys, I'm not God in the flesh. No, he worked with what he had. You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
And what did he have? He had these people who thought he was God in the flesh, so he goes, okay, he owned it. So he goes, okay, I'm God in the flesh. You guys believe that? They all said, uh-huh. He goes, oh, great. Okay, let me explain something to you. I and the Father are one. Are you guys making that connection? And they nodded. Yeah, we get it. You and the Father are one. You are in God, right? So Jesus is like, look, I and the Father are one. I am in the Father. Do you guys believe that? And they go, uh-huh. Okay, so they're acknowledging that this flesh body, this vehicle, is God in the flesh, and he is, in fact, inside of God, right?
Right, right.
So Jesus goes, okay, if you believe that I am the Son of God, then you, all of you, every one of you, are in me. Okay? Some of them might have been a bit daft and didn't get it. But he goes, so, guys, now that you're following me with these three easy steps,
mm-hmm.
I'm God in the flesh, and I'm in God. I'm in the Father. And you believe in me, therefore you are inside of me, and I'm inside of God, therefore all of you are God.
Right, right.
So that was what he was trying to solve, was the problem and the blockade in the minds of religions, which is of an outside Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't waste all of his energy trying to destroy the notion that there's only one Messiah and that it's outside of you. He just tried to make logical connections in people's minds.
Right, right.
He was a psychiatrist. He was a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was.
Wow.
people who are like Wiccan or, you know, any religion who go, Jesus Christ. No, he was the last Messiah that ushered in the age of Pisces, okay? Don't be hating on what Jesus said.
Right.
Jesus had no, I don't understand why people in the spiritual community, I get it. But,
well, I mean, they bash a lot of things, you know, which is why I brought up to you during the show about the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think that that's just a story and this and that.
Yeah.
You know, because of the Catholic religion or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it's just people have their own concepts, I guess, and you can't change the way somebody believes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can to a degree, but I don't know. There's just so much. You know, I started off with Sherry. I've been told many times that I'm a witch and that I'm a Strega witch, which is an Italian witch. I had no idea what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that I can do, Daniel, just would totally freak you out.
No, it wouldn't. Please.
No, yeah, I know, right?
Believe me, no, it wouldn't. No, it would not.
And, you know, I got away from the whole pagan thing and kind of drew back more into the Catholic faith. Because of the things that I have been experiencing.
Right.
And it's just, you know, and then I get confused with the Catholic teaching and the doctrine, and then I got caught up in the saints, like Padre Pio and, mm-hmm. you know, Saint Bernadette and all these saints that passed away and their bodies are still intact, you know, and it's like...
Yeah, but, hey, we got that with the Buddhists, too. We got that with Hindus, too.
Okay. Yeah.
So...
But my question is, what is that all about?
Okay. And like I told you guys earlier, I'm recording now for like future podcasts, which are not, it's not meant to be professional. It's meant to be private conversations for everybody to hear. So that's kind of where I'm going to go with it.
Okay, cool.
So to answer that question, ask it again, condense it real quick.
Okay. My question to you is, you know, being brought up with the Catholic religion and believing in the Blessed Mother
right.
and the different saints and seeing how the saints, when they died, their bodies remained intact hundreds and hundreds of years after their death.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the same with the Buddhists and the Hindu.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about?
Okay. Let's reverse engineer this thing.
Okay.
People talk about the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's this fear that there is some outside cabal, okay, that is they are the controllers of the world, right? They, them. If you ask some, you know, different people, you'll get different answers on who ultimately is at the top of the pyramid. Some say it's the Freemasons. Some say it's the Federal Reserve. Some say it's, you know, the Trilateral Commission, Skull and Bones, the Catholic Church. It's, you know what I mean?
Right.
But here's the thing. When we can stop them from oppressing us, when we can stop they, right? It's always outside of us, yes?
Yes.
Which is...
Sorry, there's a motorcycle going by. Excuse me.
No worries. So once again, here's what we're seeing. What we're seeing is that the solution to the world's problems is to find them, whoever they are, and put a stop to them, right?
Right.
Wait a second. Whoa, 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 whoa. hold your taters. If we go back just a few seconds or a few minutes to what we were just talking about, we were talking about Jesus' solution to people awakening, which is the blockade of an outside Messiah, the illusion of an outside Messiah, okay?
Right.
Look, positive and negative, mirror image. On the negative, what is keeping us in a state of suffering, as Buddha would say, is the illusion of an outside devil.
Right.
It's the illusion that there is some secret cabal outside of us, and if we could only find them, okay, we could stop this and bring about a new age, and we can all ascend and have superpowers, which is true. When we get into different levels of existence, those things are true.
Mm-hmm.
The illusion is that there's some outside devil.
Right.
Now, that being said, how do we deal with this problem? Well, I'm not going to tell you to go to Tibet. I'm not going to tell you to go and do, you know, 40 days and 40 nights and all that stuff. And I don't know, we didn't get to mention it on the show, but along with my novels and everything, I'm known for running this website called zeninthecar.com. Okay?
You mentioned that, yes.
Yeah, that's basically what, for the past 5 years, I've been the, you know, the guy who built the site, edited the site, wrote for the site. There's also Zen in the Car, the YouTube channel. So I also do videos and stuff, right? And the whole concept of that website was for me to bring together witches with Southern Baptists, with Gnostics, with atheists, with Presbyterian, you know, all different swath, to bring them together in kind of a Socratic dialogue. And to show other people out there that people of different spiritual understandings can work toward a common goal of freedom and liberty.
Right.
Because I believe in my activism, and I believe the Constitution is an inspired document, which I try to be very politically active, because that's important to spiritual people. And I found when I started that site that people were either in the material world so much that they were political and they believed that they could change the political system and that would do it. And then I would go to my meditation center where a bunch of people are practicing Reiki and meditation and crystal reading, tarot card reading and all that, and they don't want to have anything to do with politics at all.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, if I could just bring these two guys together, if I could bring the spiritual people into the political process and get the people in the political process to get some fucking enlightenment, you would see changes in our country and world.
So much changes, but I think that the basis of the problem is this world has left God out of the picture.
Everybody's arguing over what name you want to call him.
Right.
Yeah, they're arguing over name tags of God. You know, like I said, I don't care. Call it Pete. But it's self-evident. It's all around us,
mm-hmm.
You know. and I do the self-help thing. Like, I like reading that stuff and watching, like, you know, touchy-feely sweater-wearing motherfuckers. You know what I mean? They're like, if you just say affirmations, you know what? I'll sit there and watch that horse shit and go through the whole fluff of, oh, look, I'm so enlightened. I've got a jug of water beside me. And when I start my YouTube, and I'm not calling out names, but I'll start my YouTube video, and just to show you how enlightened I am, I'm going to record 6 minutes of me sitting in silence before I start talking, because I'm so, you know what I mean? Shut the fuck up. You know, I'm enlightened, okay, Ron? I'm just as enlightened as Buddha or Jesus or anybody else, and I love listening to hip-hop. I like smoking my cigarettes every now and then, which I am putting down. You know, but I'm a real person. I live in 2016. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
I don't live in a world where it's conducive for me as an enlightened person to live in a fucking cave.
Exactly. And like they teach. I know. I still get that.
Yeah, we are modern enlightened beings, which gets me to the idea of what is the return of the Christ, which let's take that and just remember that, but we'll talk about it later. So, that being said, let's get back to this whole outside them thing, right?
Yeah.
Recently, I watched, and I look for synchronicity in everything. And when I talk like I'm about to talk and I'm on the air, people think that I'm saying I'm the Messiah or some stupid shit like that. They don't understand that what I'm saying is that we all are. All of us are the Messiah of our own story.
Right.
Right? But they think that what I'm saying is, you know, when you say that shit, you get committed. And I know that because that is exactly what happened to me.
Oh, big time. Big time. That's what happens.
And Alan Watt, you know, Alan Watt said, you know, if you wake up in America and you say, I am God, then you're committed. And they put you on meds. If you do that shit in India, your family says, congratulations, you finally figured it out.
No kidding, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the tests for schizophrenia is, does this person believe they're Jesus Christ? You know?
Wow, yeah.
So, I mean, even the term Christian, what does it mean? Little Christs? Little Christs, wow. Like multiple Christs. And that's why Jesus said, the things you see me do, you'll do way more than that because you are evolving.
Hmm.
And technology is a part of that. You know? Don't be afraid of Ray Kurzweil and the idea of singularity and consciousness merging with technology, because I got news for you. It's already happened.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
Walk around Walmart or whatever and see how many people are staring into their screens.
But yeah, exactly.
Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. So I'm not going to tell you to trash your smartphone. What I'm saying is understand that when you use a piece of technology, you are tapping into another parallel dimension on a frequency, and that's that phone, that tablet, this computer screen that we're communicating through is a vessel for consciousness. But don't fool yourself into thinking that you are that vessel.
That's right. Yes.
Ego. Ego is the body that you think that you're in, the identity that you were given, that name on your birth certificate, you know.
Yeah.
That's why all spiritual enlightened people, there's always a name change. The Kabbalah says when you change your name, you change your fate. In all the scriptures, like in the Bible, Abram was turned to Abraham, Jacob
that's
to
right.
Israel.
Yeah.
You know, everybody who becomes enlightened changes their name. Muhammad Ali. You know? And the reason that is because the name, which means no one that you were given, it's a form of an ego to trap you in consciousness. That's why most people don't like their name that they were given.
Oh, I never looked at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that's why if you watch The Matrix, he gets so pissed off when Mr. Smith calls him Mr. Anderson. And he says, my name is Neo, the name that I chose for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's why witches, they get a secret name. Right? That they're not supposed to tell anybody.
That's right.
In the Bible, it says that whenever you are saved, that God gives you a name that only he and you know. Right?
Wow, so, I never looked at it like this, yeah.
Yeah, it's reclaiming sovereignty. It's reclaiming your own soul. That's what it's doing. It's you breaking free from the matrix. That name change, right? And so, I think all these things are interconnected. The definition of paranoid, people think it's negative, but paranoid means the ability to see connections where others do not.
That's right, yeah.
So when paranoid schizophrenics start flipping out and saying everything's connected, there is nothing wrong with them at all, man.
No, there isn't. I know it.
They're getting a download.
Yeah.
You know? And so they're having spontaneous kundalini. And the negative aspects of this world is like, we got to shut that motherfucker down. Give him some lithium quick. Okay?
Really? Yeah, because it when you do that, the world stays dumb, mm-hmm. You know? And that's what they're doing to people.
Yeah. But, you know, before I go too far, you know, I go with my first instinct. I'm going to go ahead and send you the link for that lotus flower. Okay?
Okay, cool.
And I want you to listen to it real quick and watch Tom York. Okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to do the same, but I'm going to mute out.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So you got the link. Tell me whenever you hit play.
All right, I'm hitting play now.
When you get a chance, yeah, watch it. And you'll see Tom York dancing like, you know, what most people would perceive as an idiot. Right?
Yeah.
But if you are of the mindset that truth and enlightenment and the answers to all your questions are all around you, because what's outside is a reflection of yourself, you can find great truths in everything. And this video, for me, is a big one because I actually do shit like he's doing. You know, like when I'm in my home, which is my sanctuary,
right.
And I'm cleaning, I will go to Pandora or I'll put on an album, and I will move around like a fucking idiot. to the music, right? Whatever that vibration of that music is doing to me, I will make those movements and enjoy every living fucking second out of mopping my floor.
Right, right.
Or washing my dishes. Everything becomes a sort of yoga. Right?
Huh.
Yep. There's no form or, you know, the correct posture for this shit. No, yoga is, what does yoga mean? It means union with the divine, right?
Right, right.
Getting in this frequency of breaking out of your comfort zone and your egos, right?
True, yeah.
Breaking free from that condensed version of self.
Right, yeah, big time, big time.
Move your body. Move your body, you know, to music and stuff. But if you watch that video and you actually let those lyrics kind of hit you in a subconscious way, and he's talking about the process of the lotus flower, and when you combine the music with the lyrics with the movement, and you do that, that will stimulate your kundalini frequency.
Ooh, okay.
Right? And I'm not telling you just Radiohead. Okay, if there's a certain music that you seem to be drawn towards,
right,
that is your Radiohead.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay? You can have a kundalini experience listening to Adele, okay, if that's what you're drawn to.
Right.
There's a reason that you're drawn to that. Because in that video, in that music, in that movie you love so much, in that book, in that comic book, in that idol that you are so drawn towards is a very, very crystal clear shard of truth about you at your deepest level.
Ooh, that's interesting.
May, you see what I mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Ooh, heavy.
It's you at your highest state whispering to your lowest state, which is asleep, so, and giving you subliminal messages, right? Like, for example, let me give you an example, okay?
Go ahead.
You could read, so you ever heard of the expression, I read that person like a book?
Right.
Okay. If, just for example, you were to walk into my office, or where I spend most of my creative time, I'll tell you what you'll see. As a matter of fact, hang on just a second. I'm going to make you a psychologist very, very quick.
Okay, cool.
And I do apologize if you ever want me to shut up, because I lose track of time when I start talking.
That's so okay.
Just say shut the fuck up, okay? But I'm going to make you a really good psychologist, but make sure that anything that you learn from me, you only use for good. Trust me.
Right, of course. To help. Always.
So, you're going to analyze me. You're going to do Hannibal Lecter would say it's being an eye detector, which is empathic, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm going to be vulnerable and allow you to use me as a test subject. I'm going to let you inside of my head.
Okay.
Okay. So, I'm sitting in my office, okay? This is my creative space. This is my inner bardo. This is my sanctuary. Mm-hmm. This is where I spend most of my time, okay? Now, it's a quartered-off section of my house, which is a den. Behind me, directly from my computer, is two American flags that basically create a wall, okay?
Okay.
Immediately to the left is a huge picture of my dad flipping the bird. underneath that is a picture of the signing of the Constitution. Okay. Underneath that is a bar. Close your eyes, by the way.
I am.
Visualize. Underneath that is a bar. And on the bar is a picture of my dad from 1950-something when he joined the Navy. Okay.
Okay.
A little action figure of Spider-Man hanging from a web from my ceiling. Okay. Directly to the right of that on the bar itself is an action figure of Trinity from The Matrix running up the wall. Beside that is a scene, it's all McFarlane action figures of Neo in the Matrix, the second Matrix movie in the chateau scene. Beside that is Morpheus, an action figure of Morpheus sitting in a chair. Beside that is Optimus Prime from Transformers, and then beside that is a picture of my mom when she was like 14 years old in black and white.
Okay.
You following me so far?
Yeah, I'm not going to remember it all, but I am.
It doesn't matter. But you think that you're not, but you are. It's all there. It's all in your subconscious mind. Okay.
Yeah.
The picture's there. You get an idea. Now, directly after that is a book rack, like a magazine rack, filled with comic books that I've collected since I was 6 years old.
Cool.
Okay. Superman. Well, not Superman. I'm more of a Marvel guy, so it's mostly Spider-Man.
Okay.
mostly Spider-Man and Marvel characters. To the left of that is a huge, like, 8 foot by 8 foot poster of the first Iron Man movie.
Cool.
Okay. Beside that is a poster from Star Trek Nemesis.
Now, this is off to your left shoulder when you're sitting in front of it, right?
From where I'm looking.
Right.
Okay. Underneath that is a picture of the three hot chicks from Final Fantasy X. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Beautifully cartoon character female bodies. That's art to me. Okay. The feminine form is a beautiful thing. Beside that is a holographic poster of Spider-Man. Beside that is a very expensive gift from my mom, which is collector's plates from Star Trek First Contact. Above that is a poster of Link from the Zelda video games. To the left of that is a poster of the X-Men, my corkboard, my computer, my desk, my printer, a picture of my dad to the left of me on a counter that has him with the rest of the shipmates of the USS Iowa, which he served during the Korean War. Above that is a signed autograph picture of Avery Brooks, who played Captain Sisko on Deep Space Nine of Star Trek, who I met. Above that is a picture of Captain Kirk and the crew of the first Enterprise from the old show. Beside that is a huge 4 foot by 4 foot poster of the reboot Star Trek poster. Underneath it is Wolverine. Beside that is a Spider-Man poster. On the door that goes to my laundry room / second bathroom, the door is covered with little foot by foot posters of comic book drawn beautiful women that are scantily dressed. That does nothing to me sexually, but it's very aesthetically pleasing to my eyes because it's the female form. To the left of that is an action figure of Dr. McCoy. Then there's my bookshelf, which has books on every religion you can imagine. Self-help, Cloud Atlas, Stedman's Medical Dictionary, just to name a few. There's a knight in shining armor statue. There are models of the Enterprise NX-01, Enterprise A, and the Enterprise E, the Millennium Falcon. The desk plate that went on my dad's desk when he was in the Korean War that was hand-carved by a Korean and hand-painted. And then there's my entertainment set, which has all my video game systems in it. And then there's a poster of the Matrix movie, and that's basically a 360 of what I look at every single day.
Okay.
Tell me about my psychology. What do I think about myself overall?
What do you mean, what do you think about yourself?
What's the predominant thing that you picked up? There's no wrong or right answer.
The predominant thing that I picked up is that you know who you are.
Okay.
Okay, that's what I picked up. You have some doubt. And you cry. You cry. And I don't know what you cry about, but you've cried. You second guess sometimes. I mean, you know who you are. But there are still some things that hurt you. I don't know, but that's what's coming through for me right now with you is I don't know what you cry about, but I'm seeing that strongly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Now, let's break it down. How did you get that from what I surround myself with daily?
All because right? What you surround yourself with daily is what is there to make you happy.
True. But let's remember that what I look at daily is an outer reflection of myself. Okay? So let's go back around the room.
Okay.
Okay? Go ahead. You there?
I'm here. I'm scanning your room. Hold on.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me take you around the room.
Okay.
Okay. Obviously, I'm a patriot. I have American flags all of the way around me.
Yes.
Okay. I believe in honor and duty. I believe in freedom and liberty. Right? I have a great reverence for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible says, you know, when the only of the Ten Commandments that has a promise is the one that says honor thy mother and father.
Right.
Okay. Mostly, for the most part, I'm surrounded by action or superheroes. Okay. From all different swaths, superheroes, icons like Spider-Man. Right. Well, what made Spider-Man become Spider-Man? Great power, great responsibility. He lost his Uncle Ben. The tragedy. Oh. Yeah. The tragedy that he didn't do something with his power. And that's what made Spider-Man do what he does selflessly to his own detriment, because he feels like he's trying to owe a debt, a superhero complex, right?
Right.
Neo, obviously I have a fixation with the character of Neo, which I find very, very funny, because Keanu Reeves played Neo. Keanu Reeves was born on September the 2nd. He was born of a virgin. He's playing a messianic role. He also played Little Buddha. And guess what my birthday is?
September 2nd.
September 2nd. I also was born in Georgia. If you go to Georgia, to the Capitol building, and you look at the cornerstone that was laid by the Freemasons, do you know what day it was laid?
What day?
Take a guess.
September 2nd.
September 2nd. Okay. And so there's a Messiah complex that that clearly I have,
mm-hmm.
right? But what is one of the functions of a Messiah or a hero? They sacrifice themselves.
That's right, yeah.
Okay? So, if you were to walk into my office and take an overview, and I openly talk about being a recovered alcoholic, okay?
Okay.
Because I believe that that's, you know, other people need to hear that. I've done hours and hours of you know, internet shows about being a recovering alcoholic. Iron Man is the only superhero that is an alcoholic. It's the
wow.
big. It's the biggest poster in my room. Right?
Wow, yeah.
Okay, he's got all this great power, but if he gets drunk, he can fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously that's an aspect of my personality. Star Trek, I could really go deep into that, but I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because Patrick Stewart plays Captain Picard, the Enterprise, and I use a lot of Star Trek lingo in anything I write or do. And he's also Professor Xavier in X-Men, who's empathic and psychic and finds other people with gifts. So there's that part of my personality, which is to those who are evolving, it's part of my psyche to seek those people out who are afraid, who have had weird experiences, and they don't feel normal.
Right, right.
And bring them to the Xavier Mansion and say, it's okay. Let me teach you how to channel your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point. So I'm surrounded with X-Men type stuff. That's kind of my role. I have a shaved head. You know, that's kind of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Then you got The Legend of Zelda video game things. He's the guy who there's been, I don't know how many Zelda games, but it's always a recreation. It's the stories never connect one to the other, and it's always about a princess with amnesia. Right? So clearly there's a side of me that's looking for some princess, too, right?
Right, right.
Okay, so we got that. And then we have, of course, Captain Sisko. If you know anything about Deep Space Nine, it's very spiritual, very spiritual. You watch Deep Space Nine, and let me pause on that for just a minute. You watch Deep Space Nine, the whole series from the pilot to the very last episode, and then you do like I did, because the show ended in 1999, and you go to a science fiction convention and you meet Avery Brooks, who played Captain Sisko, and you don't ask a stupid question like, what does it feel like to transport or beam down to planets? Which they do. People actually ask those questions. They do. But you ask Avery Brooks, who's also a very enlightened man, hey, Avery, when you were doing Deep Space Nine, did you find it funny that it predicted 9/11 and every event that has happened since 9/11, as far as the police state coming up, everybody being paranoid, a terrorist attack kicking it all off, and everybody is a terrorist? Could you tell me, Avery Brooks, how your series ended in 1999 and predicted the future?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, right? And so, obviously, Star Trek is a big part of my psyche, but overall, you, if you were to come in and you were empathic and you could, quote, read me like a book, you would automatically know that though I have faults, though I have pain,
mm-hmm.
though I have guilt and regrets, though I've stumbled and fallen, overall I see myself as a superhero.
Right, right.
You,
wow.
you just read me like a book. Okay?
Amazing.
So, if I am so passionate about these things that I've been drawn to, which are reflections of who I truly am, and I put these outside of myself, can you imagine what it says about the psychology of a person who gets tattoos? That's real commitment, right?
Yeah.
You're going to put that shit all over your skin so any empath can read you like a book.
Right.
Okay.
What kind of tattoo do you have?
I don't have any.
Oh, okay.
Any, period. And never will get one. And I love tattoos.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I have a personal belief. It is mine. I have nothing to go on.
Right.
But the Bible says don't put markings in your flesh for the dead, right?
True.
This is just my experiences through meditation and astral projection and things like that, and this is what I got. If you don't believe it, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But right. I believe that tattoos tell you how many times a person has reincarnated, what their past life was all about, and how they died, and what they're supposed to be doing in this life. And when you reach a point of breaking free of samsara, when you reach the last incarnation where you no longer have to come back, that you've learned everything, you won't have any tattoos.
Wow.
That's just me not trying to build a church, but in my dealings in the supernatural, it's worked every single time. It's let me, in just a glance, like Hannibal Lecter. I also am surrounded by Hannibal Lecter type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my dog is named Hannibal because I love psychology, and those books are really great for psychology. They're not horror books, but they teach you great psychology. He can look at you. And just in a split second, see the way you carry yourself, how you know, if you're hiding that accent.
Right.
You know, and he could read you like a book. And so we have to do those same things as people who are evolving, but we don't want to do Hannibal Lecter type shit and make you go eat your tongue.
Right.
we want to get inside somebody's head to fix their root traumas. And so, you know, if we all have root traumas, right?
Of course we do, yeah.
And so that is an ability, being able to read someone like that. And that's an ability that we have at our disposal for the purpose of healing those around us. Okay? Like, I used to work at a bookstore, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I also, before that, read tarot cards. So I'd already learned how to read tarot cards, and I understood what tarot cards were. And I understood this concept that I'm telling you, which is you could read people's psychology by what are they drawn to?
Right, right.
If somebody listens to, like, suicidal death metal, you know they're in a bad place emotionally.
Of course, yeah.
You know, if you are dealing with somebody who listens to hip hop and rap, it could be one of two things. They're very conceited or they're very confident.
Right.
Because
right.
If you need a boost of confidence to get out of a rut, put Eminem in your fucking head.
Yeah.
and pretend that's you singing.
Because, no shit.
Because ultimately it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know. It's not, you know, I got a sign in my office that says, I'm not arrogant, I'm just better than you. And people confuse arrogance with a negative thing. Oh, you're so self-centered. No, look, I believe in myself.
Right, right. It's different.
Yeah, it's different to be confident, you know. When I was committed, which I openly talk about, it's something I'm ashamed of because it was forcible.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a voluntary fucking thing, that's for sure.
Right.
Which is a totally different story, which is the novel that I'm writing right now, but we'll get to that.
Cool.
We had to go to group therapy. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't like, oh my God, I was forcibly committed. No, I was like, oh, this is a cool experience.
I know, right?
Never been to a nut bin before. Let's see what happens. Let's see what shakes loose, right? What am I going to learn? Who am I going to meet? Because the Bible says, be careful when you entertain strangers. Because you may be entertaining angels unawares.
Wow.
Angels always appear as homeless people or quote-unquote crazy people.
That they do.
That the masses stay away from. But those are the motherfuckers that are from a different dimension, man.
That's true. That is so true. I believe that.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Those are the motherfuckers that know what they're doing. So I'm like, oh, great. I'm in the best place possible for my spiritual evolution. It's in a nut house.
Right? No kidding, right?
I'm about to meet some extraterrestrial dimensionals that are walking around in holographic bodies that look like humans that are going to tell me some great shit.
That's true. And I look for them even at the grocery store. I look for them walking by them. If I walk by them and they look at me funny, I'm like, that's one right there.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
You know?
Yeah, and when I went to group therapy, the psychiatrist, who was clearly an angel, he kept saying, I'm a genius, I'm a genius, I'm a genius. And this one girl who had been committed there for a lot of trauma, she says, why do you keep saying that? You shouldn't say that. And he looked at her, and he's an old black guy, he's cool as a cucumber. He looked at her with this cavalier look, and he smiled, and he says, I like to hear myself say that I'm a genius. I just like to hear it. He says, when I hear it, it sounds good, and I believe it, and then therefore I am.
Wow.
Yeah, man. I'm so depressed. Well, you're absolutely correct.
No shit, right?
I'm such a victim. Mm-hmm. You got that shit right. You said it.
Right, right.
Okay, that's your power. You know.
Holy shit.
That is your power. You do create your reality. I'm so fucking mad. And you're going to keep being.
That's right, yeah.
You create a feedback loop. Okay, your experience in this matrix, it's a feedback loop. From your heart to your mouth, to your mouth to your ears, to your ears to your mind, to your mind to your heart.
Right, right.
So it's a circuit. Okay? It's a circuit, man.
And that circuit goes round and round.
Mm-hmm. And what did Bible say? It said, out of the heart of man, the mouth speaketh.
Right, yeah.
Okay? If you really want to know what somebody's true intentions are, is this person manipulating me, or is this person for my better good or not? Listen to what they say.
Yeah.
Because you can't, unless they're silent, they'll tell you everything you need to know.
Unless they're a psychopath, you know.
Oh, yeah. We can get into sociopathy, but, I got theories on that, too.
That's something heavy for me, because I dealt with my brother, who's a drug addict and an alcoholic, and he would just do shit to me, like go in my room and turn pictures upside down, or...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would just take pictures of things because I thought I was losing my mind.
Uh-huh.
And when I took pictures of things, he was getting all of my pictures on his iPhone.
Uh-huh.
So he would go in my room and turn whatever I took a picture of upside down,
oh, yeah.
Or move it in a different direction. And this was just not too long ago, because he was doing drugs and being an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was totally freaking me out. I had to move out.
Mm-hmm.
I had to move out. And it's just, and he could sit there and talk to you right to your face.
Mm-hmm.
And he could sell you a pile of shit and convince you you could use it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just so manipulative and so deceitful. And it was just unreal. And he was the legit, quote-unquote, psychopath. That's
right.
What a psychopath is. You know what I mean? So, I don't even have an answer for that. I don't know why that is with people like that.
Mm-hmm.
What is your analogy on that?
Hang on just a second. I was going to send Sherry a message. I hope she didn't think we forgot her.
No, I sent her a message and told her I was on with you.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, so you want to get into... Before we do, though, because I will tend to forget it, and it's something that I'm having to break free from, but, I'm a writer. That's what I am. It's my passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't market my shit, and so I've had to kind of buckle down and be like, I really need to spread my shit, And it's not just that I've spread it because I want people to buy my books or anything. That's great, because I need to eat. But it's because,
right.
Because a lot of this stuff that I'm talking about, I'm really passionate about, and I want other people to know this stuff. And so my first best destiny is writing it. And so I don't write for, I write because, sure, I need a profit. It's something I love and I deserve to make money off
of
that.
Yeah.
But then again, it's because I want people to read it so that they get it.
That's right, yeah.
But I'm an eclectic type guy. I guess I'm kind of the opposite of a sociopath in the way that I'll put great shit out there, but it makes sense to me, and I understand how to connect that. But I don't necessarily explain it to people on how they can pick up on it.
Right.
And so, like, what I'm doing right now is one of the subdomains that's in the car.com is called downloaded content, right?
Okay.
And I never explained it to anybody. I just did it. I just started. And it's a subdomain, but people think that every post is just a blog. And if you were to just read, if you were to read the most current blog, and just jump in there, you would get a lot out of it, okay?
Oh, I'm going to check it out, yeah.
Hang on, as a matter of fact, I'm going to send you to the, but before you do, let me explain it, okay?
Okay, yeah.
In all actuality, it's a novel that I'm writing, okay? It's a story that I'm writing from the very first post up until right now, up until it's completed.
Oh, cool.
So you'll get a lot from the most current post, but if you actually go to the very first post and then read it like it's a novel,
mm-hmm.
which it secretly is, okay, it's going to build on one brick on top of the other, all of this stuff that you and me are talking about, all of it.
Wow. Okay.
But not in a textbook type way.
Right.
Okay. And basically, you know, like I said, I'm a big comic book geek, and I'm a big writer, and I'm in the theater, and there's this concept in called breaking the fourth wall. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And like the latest Deadpool movie, he's a comic book character that's known for breaking the fourth wall, which is he acknowledges the audience and communicates directly with the audience, right?
Ah, okay.
In theater and in movies, that's called breaking the fourth wall, right?
I didn't know that.
And it's basically interrupting the illusion of what's playing out before the audience.
Oh, no kidding. That's interesting.
Right, and bringing them into it, okay? Like, for example, have you ever watched that show on Netflix called House of Cards?
Never.
Okay. Have you ever seen a movie where all of a sudden the main character, you know, looks at the camera and directly talks to you, but people around him have no idea that, you know, it's like they're not even aware he's doing it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. It's called breaking the fourth wall. And that fourth wall, and that's also a symbol of enlightenment.
Interesting. Wow.
This character is interacting with the collective consciousness because it's aware that it's only a character. And it will do so when needed, and then once it's done communicating what it needs to the collective consciousness, it then pretends to be a character again, and the movie continues.
Sweet.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense, yes.
Okay. So you, right now, are in a movie. And you are the main character of the movie, and there is a collective consciousness watching. They're all in the theater, okay?
Wow.
You, to take personal power of your life, need to break the fourth wall. Uh-oh.
No shit.
Now, this is just a technique that I do for me, for my life and my reality that I live in. I narrate my life.
That's cool.
I will break the fourth wall, and people think I'm an absolute lunatic, but I will be in the middle of Walmart or talking to a family member, and then I will break the fourth wall of reality. I will look to the left, picture a camera, and then say exactly what I'm thinking to the camera. Okay? This does quite a few things. It allows me to, one, break whoever is listening to me. It breaks their state.
Literally, yeah.
Literally, they're like, what the fuck is he doing? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck? And then, of course, they're aware. Unlike in a movie, they go, who the fuck are you talking to? You know, like I'll say something, then I'll say, he said so wittingly.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'll narrate myself and laugh, and I pretend that I'm in a sitcom when I'm, you know, when circumstances around me are negative, like my car catches on fire, which I don't own a car, but if I did, and it was on fire, I would just pretend I'm in a comedy at the moment. Because haven't you seen a car on fire in a comedy?
That's a riot. That is a riot, Daniel. Yeah.
Right. Okay? Haven't you seen a beautiful, in my case, I have seen beautiful women in a fucking slasher film. Right?
Okay. Wow.
I have seen very poignant and inspiring and tear-jerking moments in a fucking comedy.
Wow.
I've seen when Forrest Gump fucking when his mom dies in that comedy, I cried.
Yeah, of course.
So choose what movie you want to be in. You know.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Be the main character. Be the hero. Be the superhero. I love Regina Spektor, and she's got this song, and it's I don't need. She says I'm the hero of this story. I don't need to be saved.
Ooh.
You go to the Matrix movies and the kid, you know, kid, he goes, Neo, you saved me. And Neo says, I didn't save you, kid. You saved yourself.
Interesting. Wow.
Ultimately, that's what Jesus said. He said, look, dude, he says, in that day, speaking of the day that you become self-aware, he says, you will ask of me nothing. I don't want to be your Messiah. Be your own fucking Messiah. I got shit to do.
Wow.
I got my own story that I'm the main character in, right?
Yeah.
This shit's not hard. It's not hard. Enlightenment is easy, man. It's a second. It's a decision.
So why does, like, the Catholic religion put these things out, like praying and all this repetitious prayer and all this stuff? What type of a mind control is that? Now that you're on that subject.
Well, ultimately, keep in mind that anything that you see antagonistic, including the Catholic Church or anything, is also that's you. That's a part of you.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is within you. Okay. But from my interpretation, the reason that the Catholic Church puts out, you know, saying these repetitive prayers is Jesus answered that. He said, by your much speaking, you think that God hears you.
Right.
Okay. No, it has nothing to do, you know, it has to do with intent. It has to do with the intent of what you're communicating to the divine. Like, for example, I'll use Anthony Hopkins as the perfect thing, right? Anthony Hopkins was an alcoholic, and he went to AA, you know, and he didn't want to. Anybody who goes to Alcoholics Anonymous, they never want to go.
Right.
They're usually forced to go, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he was uncomfortable. He wanted to get out of the room. He goes heading for the exit as soon as the meeting is called. And this Jesuit priest meets him at the back. He says, where do you think you're going, you know? And Anthony Hopkins is like, I got to go. Of course, the priest, he knew what the deal was, right? And he goes, well, wait a second. Let me tell you, you look busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted. Right? Let's get real, Anthony. You are in a bad fucking place, right? If you sit around and you shut the fuck up and you be humble, you might get some answers to get out of this hell that you've created, which is alcoholism, right? And so Anthony Hopkins is like, okay, fine. Look, what's the most powerful, quickest prayer in the world? And the Jesuit priest said, fuck it. It's the prayer of release. Jesuit priest said that. Said the most powerful prayer in the world is, fuck it. Why? Because it's the intent of I surrender. Right?
Wow.
Of letting go.
Right.
Like Tyler Durden would say, just let go. Right?
Yeah.
So the repetitive prayer is to keep people distracted from, it has nothing to do with the prayer or remembering mantras or any of that horse shit. Those are ideas and those are concepts. They never were intended to be rigid forms of reaching enlightenment. All they are is a coat rack.
Right.
It's a structure. It's a structure. You know, I do yoga by feeding my fucking dog, and those postures are just as strict and adherent as whatever, Lotus, and the dog, the downward dog, and all that shit. It has nothing to do with form. It has nothing to do with the sayings. It has to do with intention. That's why magic works.
Hmm.
You could call it magic or prayer. If I light a candle with the intention of you know, it going to Shiva, and me lighting that candle in my conceptualization of God as Kali and Shiva, and I say, you know, Kali, Shiva, you know, with this intention, I want you to please protect my loved ones. That is just as effective as somebody saying one Hail Mary or 500 Hail Marys for the same thing.
Right.
Because it's not the words and it's not the outward anthropomorphized version of what you're sending it to. It's the intention and the vibration that you're sending it with.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So you know, if doing Hail Marys raises your vibration, then you say all the Hail Marys you want.
Right.
Okay? But if you don't feel any vibration or really feel that there's an intent behind it, you need to discard that. It's not serving you.
Right, okay.
Because Buddhists have prayer beads, too. Catholicism didn't come up with that shit.
Right.
Okay? But it's a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Every religion is true, but every religion is also a lie.
Wow, that is fascinating. You are just blowing my mind.
Sorry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's because the Old Testament, it says, hang on, and I'm going to quote, I'm going to look up the exact verse in the King James. Hang on just a second.
Okay.
Excuse me. Yeah, here we go. Okay, so, and I love the King James because it's not deleted as much as these newer versions. All right, in Proverbs 25:2, right?
Yeah.
It says, it is the glory of God, okay, to conceal a thing. Okay, right? It is the glory of God to conceal or hide a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter.
Wow, so everything has to be, it's kind of like everything has to be searched for.
Right, man. Right.
Does that make sense? Like, you have to do the work.
You have to, because it's not for those who aren't worthy. They're not ready yet. Even Jesus taught having a secret doctrine.
Content podcast. Download content.